Today, once again, eGrow News goes where no one else goes, and we have the rare opportunity to speak with none other than the fantastic photographer himself, Richard Franklin. Richard, how are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm fine, Ron. Good to speak to you.
Good, good. As you probably know, we talked off and on. The last issue that we did with you, which I believe was in 2009, was one of, and still is, one of our most sought-after, viewed online publications that we have ever done. And I want to say thank you for that.
Well, I want to say thank you, too. It was very nice of you to pick me out. It was very nice of you to take the time to bother to, you know, find out what I do and how I think and to give me some exposure. I appreciate that.
Oh, we welcome that. Now, Richard, we have a personal relationship and we know each other, but for our readers, I would love to bring them up to date as to what you're doing now. I've heard that you've been doing some writing, and if you don't mind telling us a little bit about it, go ahead.
Well, as far as immediate news is concerned, I just came back from 3 weeks in the Caribbean. My parents live down in Antigua. They are Antiguan citizens, so I go up and down there quite a lot. And when I'm there, I try to take the opportunity to shoot because it's so beautiful. So I did a little bit of shooting down there. But I have written three books in the last 4 months. One of them is actually written by a third party about me. It's called The Colorful Life and Photography of Richard Franklin. And it's nice to have a third party write about you than you try to write about yourself. But it's I think it reflected, you know, about me from a third person's point of view, and I was happy for that. Then I wrote two more personal books. One is my philosophy, really, about the way I approach photography and my desire, if you like, to influence other people about a certain way of thinking, and it's called Creating Your Own Reality. And also I wrote a book on my artistic photography called The Artistic Photography of Richard Franklin. And I personally am not vastly interested in having them published because I think we're living in a world where transition is happening at warp speed. Major publishing chains are collapsing.
True.
Major book retailers like Borders have gone into bankruptcy. I think less and less people are reading. And I think the future is in e-books. So to me, e-books is where it's at, and sort of coffee table artistic books are of marginal interest to me. So it's fun to do them. It's fun to have them as e-books, and I can reach a far greater portion of far greater exposure to the world as such, partly because of this incredible reach that the internet has. I can translate them into multiple languages and get them to a far greater audience than one could ever dream of historically.
I see that. Keeping along this line, it seems as if you have a certain philosophy that deals with, is it more of a how-to, or is it not quite like a how-to philosophy?
I believe that I have very little to bring to the world of how-to. I think that that everybody has to gradually discover their own, if you like, signature, their own taste that's really reflected by, you know, their environment and what they're particularly into. And everybody's into something different, sees the world differently. And therefore, if I was to teach somebody, what am I really teaching? I don't really feel that I have that much to teach. There's a few tricks, there's a few tips, but there's plenty of how-to books out there. There's an extraordinarily endless amount of information on the internet. And in fact, I think people are, you know, I don't really want to pander to people who are a little bit lazy.
That's a good point.
You know, if you want to learn how to use an f-stop or you want to learn how it works, you know, look it up on the internet. You want to know how your camera works, read your manual. I would challenge people to rather like that they have to make an effort first about really how to use this marvelous device called a camera. I can only encourage people, I think, by giving pointers along the way, which I do in my books, about how I approach a shoot in terms of thought.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that, because how do you separate that from, say, getting a commercial assignment and your philosophy?
A commercial assignment?
Yes. For instance, what if Budweiser said, okay, Richard, I want you to shoot the Budweiser girls, and how do you apply your philosophy, your technique to a commercial shoot opposed to a more personal shoot?
Well, I'm a straight shooter on these questions. The fact is I don't live a life like that. I refuse to take on paid work. I've lived for years on basically shooting what I wanted to shoot, and then offering up for sale to somebody else. I don't claim that that's necessarily the approach that other people that I recommend to other people, but it works for me. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, mm-hmm. if you like, the creative person in me that animates me to want to shoot, or whatever is the artist in me that I have manifested, it came from doing what I wanted to do.
And that's what I wanted to bring out.
Rather than what
exactly.
somebody else was asking me to do.
Yeah.
So I tend to have really operated on purely shooting what I wanted to do, and then sometimes offering it to other people if they wanted to buy it. But having said all of that, the main thrust of what I do in photography is not really commercially based. I do it because I like doing it, and I would like to encourage other people to have, if you like, simply a hobby,
mm-hmm.
something that they do in order to fill up as much of the available time as they have. I've done it perhaps more professionally than just as a hobby, but it's certainly, professionally is something that it's a strange word for me because I don't generally do it for money.
Well, for someone who possibly is thinking about getting into photography, at what point would you suggest that they begin?
I would personally discourage people from getting into photography as a profession. I think that we're living in a world in which I think that there's less and less money to go around for people to be professionals. I think that in a world where there's less and less magazines, where we still don't understand how to monetize the future, which is the internet, I think that it's not the greatest profession. I think it's the greatest hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't spend my time really encouraging people to be professionals. I can't give them a rational reason. And also an important uh-huh. thing is that photography is such a vast field that I only operate in the areas where I operate. I mean, I'm a glamour photographer and I do artistic things that amuse me to do. I can't speak for people, for example, in fashion. I can't speak for people in doing commercials, products and commercials or landscape or architectural.
Or still life or whatever.
These are not my field.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not the right person to speak about it. But it seems to me in general that it's you can make some income out of photography, but income doesn't equal capital. And I think it's a limited field. But I don't see why everybody shouldn't be an enthusiastic, talented amateur.
Wouldn't you say, though, even as a hobby, lighting is extremely important in photography, whether whatever field of endeavor that the person intend to go into. I think lighting is the crucial point to the whole thing. I've looked at your glamour photographer, and I've looked at other photographers because, as you know, we get submissions all the time. And your lighting is flawless. Is there a reason behind that, or a technique that you would like to share with us?
I thank you for the compliment. I don't see it that way. I see, like any artist, I see mistakes, and you constantly do a shoot, and you wish, you look at it and say, oh gosh, I wish I'd made that choice along the way. But having said that, I have very strong views about this. I think that we live in a world in which there's a billion cameras, SLRs. I'm not talking about cell phones. I think 99.999%, and I may be being generous, of the people that have those cameras have never read their manuals.
Yeah.
I think if they read their manuals and understood their cameras perfectly, they would still be at only at the ability to make have only the ability to take snapshots, because lighting is obviously such an incredibly important aspect of shooting any type of photography other than landscape photography. Landscape photography in general, one doesn't use lights. I can't, generally one would have no reason. But
right.
pretty much everything else is dependent on lights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that field, I think that out of those billion, none of them are aware that lighting even exists. They know that they may have a little inbuilt flash on camera, or they may be able, when they buy their camera, to be offered what they call a dedicated flash on top of the camera. But those are very, very minor, small points of light.
Mm-hmm.
In the work of a photographer, they're not good enough, in my opinion, to be operating as a professional. You might get a few lucky shots, but in general, it's got very small amount of light and it's very low power and it has none of the elements of professional lighting. I think the revolution in photography has not been about cameras. I think that a camera is still basically just a device through which light comes in
uh-huh.
and gets registered on the case nowadays of a CCD plate. It used to be film, And in before you used to get it developed, then handed to you. Now you can do it through your computer. I don't think the principles of a camera have really changed.
I see.
What I think the revolution has been is in lighting, which has become incredibly portable, very reasonably priced, very powerful, and I believe that that feature has been missed out by the non-professional market.
Mm.
Obviously, professionals are very well aware of it, and you know, photographic lighting people have historically aimed at the professional market. I'm in touch with a number of the top manufacturers, and I encourage them to aim at the amateur market, which I believe is untouched.
I think so, too.
As opposed to the professional market, which I believe is saturated.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I can tell you as a fact that one of the lighting companies, a well-known name that I'm dealing with currently, their sales are 45% down on last year's sales. And that, for them, is a reflection of the fact that camera stores are closing down left and right, and also the fact that professionals are earning less and less money and dropping out of the field.
Yeah. I just got a couple of more questions. I would like to stay on this for a moment, and that is,
sure,
with the issue that we have getting ready to come out with you, we always put two issues. We put, obviously, the main issue, and then we have a bonus issue for our readers and your fans.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to do this time is, because you've been so gracious enough to provide for us the glamour photos that we will have in the main issue, and then we're going to take those artistic photos that you provided and do a special bonus artistic issue, because those artistic photos that you do, Richard, are just stunning. And if I can just inquire a little bit, what goes into your philosophy in creating the various illusions, which they are to me illusions, that you create in your artistic preparations?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because I don't often get the opportunity to speak out on these things, because I think these have been great joys in my life, and they are meaningful to me, and they are things that obviously I'm interested in. The first thing is this, is that I have a strong belief that we have these sort of rather trite sayings that we don't really challenge. For example, it's all in the eye.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe that. I believe it's all in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that anything you do is really a reflection of the way you think, which is a product of your upbringing, your values, the cultures you were exposed to. The signature of my work, whether it be in glamour or artistic, first of all, is I love color. I love bright colors. I loved them when I was a child. I loved them as an adult.
Good point.
If you look at my work,
yes.
I don't know to what extent I'm unique in this respect, but I don't think I've ever shot a black and white picture, or, you know, in my life. Maybe just for a laugh once, I think, but almost zero. So clearly I love color, so we start off with that. And the second thing is I love classical themes. And I also enjoy really having a balance between in life, because I'm a great believer in balance in general in all things. And so I try to balance the sexy side of my glamour life, if you like, of my glamour photography, balance it by deliberately aiming to elevate women. And if you, for example, go into my artistic work and some of the series that I'm particularly fond of, like, for example, Spartan Warrior Woman,
right,
and also
okay.
Gladiators,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I defy anybody to show me where any photographer's ever made a woman stronger.
Exactly.
I have a lot of respect for the people that I shoot, and I want to make them feel heroic and strong. I want them to feel majestic, and I want to create something timeless. I want to create something like a painting. Now, that partly comes from being fortunate enough to grow up into a culture in England like I did, where you're exposed to great classic art, where I think in America there's less exposure to that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be quite normal in London to go to amazing art galleries and the National Gallery, and to go to, you know, in Europe, which is not very far away, to very great galleries there. I think people get less exposed in America to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to an actual shoot, I'm not model-driven when it comes to my artistic shoots. I am in the case of my glamour shoots, but not in the artistic shoots. I'm after a concept.
Okay.
So I will be very, you know, I don't shoot my artistic stuff frequently, because I'm only prepared to shoot when I feel I have a concept worthy
mm-hmm.
of bothering to shoot. So I will look for an elevated theme. Sometimes I'll start off and I'll experiment with it a few different times and discover it's not the direction I want to go in.
Right.
But I can tell you this, I never visualize in advance ever what it's going to be. I can think of a concept in general, like, for example, gladiators.
Okay.
But, and I can go around and try and put some gladiator outfits together, but I don't really have in my mind any feeling of what it's going to look like. I think that my joy is in the preparation of a shoot, of the concept, and the feeling that I have of, yes, I'm preparing, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can to create all the elements. It's like sort of cooking, really. And then you throw in a lot of ingredients during the shoot, and things turn out completely differently from what you expected when you first started.
Yeah.
That's normally the way my artistic shoots evolve. I don't think that any of them are really connected to something that I visualized at the very beginning.
I think my favorites are Ninja Warrior, and it's a toss up between, but I'm gonna have to go with Degency, I believe it is. I think.
Well, if I might on those two, those are two interesting examples. The Decadence, the second one you mentioned, is a lady lying down, reclining with a gold turban and various accessories on this table. And it's very sort of Greek, Roman, and decadent and indulgent and rather slothful, slow and sensual. The Ninja Warrior is different. And
I think that's my favorite.
Let me tell you how those two came about, because they were interesting. They were earlier ones for me. They were done some years ago. The first of the two was the Decadence one, and that was in the early days as a glamour photographer. I began to get an increasing number of girls come to me who wanted me to shoot them. But then in my own mind, I had to decide who I thought was photogenic, both in terms of face and body. I shoot, generally, I have a, you know, what I like is a certain type of girl, usually fit, fairly compact body. It doesn't matter to me about height. I don't like them too skinny. I don't really go for sort of big booty girls. I see a sort of girl that's a sort of a fit type of body. It doesn't have to be big boobs, etc., that I see as what I like.
Okay.
And outside of those parameters, I'm less comfortable. So at the same time, if I make a promise to shoot somebody, I have an ethical side where I say, well, I've got to give them the very best I can do. But then I say to myself, well, I can't give them exactly sometimes how they see themselves. And so in this particular case, in the Decadence shoot, I didn't see the model as somebody I could, you know, put in a bikini and do a good job and make them look, you know, wonderful in that aspect. So I decided to go for something different, which I felt was more elevated, to try and make them a timeless painting of somebody in ancient Rome or ancient Greece reclining after a feast and give that atmosphere. It was actually a shoot that was a bit of a groundbreaker for me, because I suddenly discovered the joys of something that I hadn't really expected. I had never felt that I was an artist. I'd never seen myself that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a huge joy that I had created something that looked to me like a painting that I would enjoy. And the elements of that coming together were tremendously stressful. I do everything alone. I refuse to use assistants. I don't fake anything. I don't fake any digital backgrounds. I only touch up skin tones. I did that in my living room. I took my dining room table, which was made of glass. I got the model to lie on it. I spent the entire shoot worrying that my table might collapse and she would be sliced in half. It was really, really, very worrying for me, because I'm very sensitive, and the idea that I would hurt somebody would be devastating. I couldn't give a damn about the table, but I was very concerned that I might endanger the model. But anyway, I took that risk, and probably wrongly, but anyway, it worked. But I generally don't think that, you know, risks are advisable with human beings, you know, to indulge ourselves. But in that case, it worked. But I wrapped her in fabric. I put little things that I had in my house, little glass pieces in front of her. I put some grapes. And I lit it, and it turned out wonderfully well.
Oh, yeah.
The Ninja Warrior was a much more sophisticated shoot in terms of lighting. And what that was about was I had shot the model as a glamour model on a couple of occasions. And she's actually on my site. And I got bored with that. I'd done it. What was I supposed to do again? Shoot more bikini stuff? So I thought, well, next time I'll try something different. So I remember she came to my house. I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do. But somebody had left from a previous shoot where I'd rented my house a samurai sword in the house. And I had some fabric from some previous shoots. And I said, well, why don't you just wrap yourself into the fabric and pretend you're some sort of ninja lunging forward with your sword and be very dramatic, you see. And then I thought, well, why not turn her into a different color?
Mm-hmm.
Why not
mm-hmm.
make her into a character that you might see in Star Wars in
exactly.
a bar? They had this famous scene in Star Wars where all these different creatures from the universe come around. And I had this vision that she could be some sort of a fierce blue warrior woman who is, you know, from somewhere from outer space, but in this environment where other people from outer space congregate. And so I shot her with blue gels, which made turned her blue. But at the same time, I used backlighting that was yellow, and I think I had yellow that was above her head to light her hair or the fabric she was wearing. And I also blurred a lot of the action using filters, and I used a wide-angle lens. Now, the reason I stress all of those things is that I never expected in advance for the picture to look like that. So if those listeners want to go back on this picture and have a look and see the effects, what they'll see that interested me was the if you like, the wash of color all around the model.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that even though she's blue, her fabric and other colors around her are not blue. And part of that is a reflection of things that I discovered as I was doing it. I discovered, for example, I could make her blue, but if she's wearing red fabric, the red fabric wouldn't change color. It would still be red. So that was very interesting to selectively, if you like, begin to color where you wanted to color. And the second thing was that by using a lot of glass, by using a wide-angle lens with a filter and having backlights, it reflected light into my lens, which in another circumstance might be a negative, but it turned out to be a positive because it sort of washed color right across back into the scene. And instead of her being perceived as, in fact, was the actuality, as just a model against a black background with a sword,
exactly.
It suddenly becomes a much more dynamic composition full of light and color from coming from all directions.
And I tell you, they're spectacular, fantastic, and we're going to have the readers and your fans obviously go on your website and take a look at it. But before I go into another area, Richard, you've been the talk of the town, I'm speaking of Los Angeles, with this fabulous seven-story house you have. Now, before you get into it, what I like to do is to take a pause for a moment. And then let's get into that seven-story home that you have. How's that sound?
My pleasure.